She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. My name is Gina Murphy Darling, your host for this next hour. Thanks for being here. I want to do a quick shout out to one of our sponsors for today's show, Habitat for Humanity. Their mission is to create a more compassionate and just world. They bring people together to build homes, communities, and hope. To find a Habitat for Humanity near you, I really encourage you to visit habitat.org and just put in your zip code. If you are in Tucson, you can visit habitattucson.org. And I can't say enough about their commitment to giving people a hand up, not a hand out, how they involve the homeowners in the process. So think about doing a really good thing for yourself and connect with Habitat for Humanity. And we thank them for their support. So get ready, everybody. The name of our show today is Change Your Story, Change Your Life. Joining me for this hour is Dr. Carl Greer, a Jungian analyst, a shamanic practitioner, a clinical psychologist, author, philanthropist, and I'd like to add thought leader, clearly a thought leader in today's very wild and crazy world. And we're going to talk to him for this hour about his book, somewhat, Change Your Story, Change Your Life, Using Shamanic and Jungian Tools to Achieve Personal Transformation, and how we go about changing the stories that we tell ourselves and that no longer serve us. Welcome, Carl, and thanks for being on the journey with me for this next hour.
Thanks, Gina. Good to be here.
Yeah, and I have a lot of questions. I want to come out the other side on this one, because as I shared with you off air, I am working the book. I would call it a workbook or a work/playbook. So I really want to get the intention out there that once listeners hear this story, that they are encouraged to do it, because we all have stories that we tell ourselves. So anyway, a wonderful way to start is by asking you to share some of your journey, what a journey it has been, and how that kind of culminated into writing this book. Oh, the places you've been, Carl Greer.
Well, I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My dad was in the steel business, and we lived in Gary back in Pittsburgh, and I thought I was going to be working in the steel business. I worked in the mills a couple summers. Then I went to Lehigh University, became a metallurgical engineer, went to get an MBA at Columbia University, ended up getting my doctorate, taught there for a while in the business school, then became a businessman. And after about 20 years of doing that, I went back to school in psychology, became a clinical psychologist, then a Jungian analyst, had always been interested in shamanism. So my story shifted several times along the way, and in the shamanic world, we sometimes say that people have nine lives, and so I'm not sure if I'm on my seventh or eighth, but I know I'm getting close to the end.
We call it the third act,
which
is a really nice euphemism for whatever you're going to do, you better do it.
But you
quickly go over some of those things, and when you talk about having interest in shamanic practices and those kind of comments, think about it. You're an MBA. It's a kind of thinker. It's a left brain versus right brain. What were some of the things that piqued your interest to go into this and open up this journey for yourself? Because it is a conscious thing.
You know, as a kid, I used to read the stories about Indians and mountain men, and I was always intrigued by them. And then I read the Castaneda books and Lynn Andrew books and other books about shamanism, medicine people. And I was intrigued and thought that if I had an unfettered life, I'd like to become one. But I had responsibilities, family, and I didn't see a way to do it until around the year 2000. I had read Alberto Villoldo's book, Shaman, Healer, Sage, and went to one of his trainings, and from there, I really was able to fulfill my interest in shamanism by taking all his trainings and teaching in his school, and then spending a lot of time with shamans in various parts of the world, continuing my practice and working with them. So it's been a calling that I never felt I could take time to do, Gina, but somehow my life arranged itself so that I was able to do so.
And you're doing it. You're doing it. You're impacting the world of Mrs. Green, I can tell you that right now. So here's a question. You know, people have gone crazy with this Ancestry.com and sending in their DNA samples, and it's quite humorous at times, quite unexciting at times. Some people say I'm everything that I thought I was. When I was reading the book, I was trying to come up with a way to explain to our listeners, so why am I? You can explain it, about our stories. We all tell ourselves stories, and what the analogy I made was, this is really more about our spiritual DNA, or every word that was ever spoken up through the ages about our stories. It's not just about what happened from when we showed up on this planet. Is that fair or accurate to say that you're helping us to take steps to explore a deeper kind of DNA and how to change some of those stories?
Well, I think to get to the deeper, you have to spend a little time with the surface. And the surface would be as you step back and say, okay, Gina, what's your story? What's the story of your health?
Right.
The story of your relationships, story of your psychology, story of your work, vocation, story of your relationship to a higher power or being of service in the world. And those are key chapters I talk about in this book. And you would be able to think about those topics and probably come up with some stuff. And then I might say, okay, and maybe you have other things that are of interest to you, your relationship to money, or time, or power, or sexuality. So each of these may be things about which you could tell a story. And then if I were to further say, okay, Gina, are you happy with those stories? And you might say, well, in this area I am, in this area I'm not. And if I were to further say, well, if you had your druthers, how would you like them to be? And you might come up with some other things that you'd like to have happen in those areas. And then I might say, well, why aren't you doing that? And then you'd pause for a moment and say, well, you know, because of this or that, when my kids get older, you know, when this happens or that happens. But usually, when you get to that juncture, the left brain's not enough to make the change, because if you really wanted to change, you change. And so I offer suggestions for getting into some of the unconscious transpersonal reasons why people don't change, and that's getting to that deeper level. But the surface level is to really be very honest with oneself about what is your story as you are currently viewing it.
And you know, I took a course at the beginning of the year that helped me a lot with that. It was Michael Beckwith, and he talks about the level of consciousness and mm-hmm. very clearly talked about things like, do you sound like you're in victim consciousness? These are not woo-woo terms. Do I sound like mm-hmm. I'm a victim? Or do I sound like I can manifest, you know what I mean? Or do I just,
yep.
All of those things were very helpful and powerful tools. Things aren't growing fast enough with Mrs. Green's world. That's a perfect example. Well, if I keep saying that, guess what? So we've already changed that story. And that's more of a superficial one, but it is reflective of how you begin that journey. And I want to ask you this. Do you think, as we delve a little bit more deeply into it, that it might be for someone that isn't really finding it extremely easy, that would be me, to do it with a friend? Because when you start saying, you know, tell me your story, and is that working for you? What would you like to change? I had a spirituality group that would be all over this, of helping to change our stories. It impacts us in every single way. So maybe I need a buddy.
Yeah, a lot of people find that very helpful, Gina, and a lot of people do this in groups. I mean, I know there's workshop groups that just work on the exercises in this book, and then they can talk about them and support each other as they are looking at changes they like to make and support each other in making them.
And it makes life easier. That's what I want to say to people. If you do this, it doesn't make life harder. It makes life easier, and there's understanding that comes along with it. It's like the book, The Artist's Way. You start really recognizing and living at a different level of observation. Some people call it consciousness, but observation. What about
yes.
What about the like some of the beginning steps. Can you delve into the book a little bit about like chapter three and how do we start with getting the stories out? And I'm always making sure like I'm not editing the story before I get it out. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, I don't want to edit this. This is what I'm really thinking.
Yeah, well, that's the first threshold thing to get over, because a lot of times the story we tell about ourselves is a story we would like others to hear.
Yes.
Not the story that's true for us. So once you get past that, and I like first just a lot of ways you can start, but just maybe a timeline. You know, tell your story from the first thing you can remember all the way through. And then maybe what's your emotional story? What are some of the things that are really highlights in your emotional memories? And then once you've done all didactically, you know, written, you may say, all right, I'm going to use my right brain a little bit. What's the color of my story, or the picture that would describe it, or a poem that would capture it, or a song? So you're trying to engage in a lot of different ways, and once you've done that, then you can go back to what you were saying about themes. Is there a theme that captures it? You know, I'm always the bridesmaid, never the bride. You know, I can't win for losing, or, you know, slogging through quicksand. There's just some images that just seem to capture where you are. And then you have a lot of kind of perspectives at that point as to what your current story is, if you're really being honest, and that's a starting point.
And the good thing about that to me is that when I was doing it, the story came up, what I came at it from perspective of what stories do I want to change. Mm-hmm. A lot of the stories I tell are great, and I love the life I've had. Even, mm-hmm. you know, the journey to becoming Mrs. Green, it's wonderful to look back or in retrospect and figure out how you got here, and then to, as you say, sit in the director's chair, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Do you find, this is a very specific question, in the many people that you've worked with and you're encountered, especially in the United States alone, and I want to get into that a little bit too, that people need to change their story or might want to consider, we never give advice, about money. It's really interesting because I have been sharing it with people, and I have a very, very harsh money story from my family for generations, and I'm changing it. I've changed lots of it already. Do you find that a lot of people do need to change their conversations about money, or what kinds of themes do you find out?
Yeah, well, that would be one, and there can be some people, money is a starting point, but they're overly frugal. You know, they're really,
yes.
In some ways, stingy or overly generous to their detriment.
Yes.
And so, you know, the themes of giving and receiving and holding back and giving forth all start to reverberate maybe in relationships or in their job. And so you start to see once you get into one chapter, it can overflow into others.
And you say things like, and it's so weird, Carl, and I'm sure that you live in this paradigm of you start hearing other people's stories too. And I don't say it out loud. I just say, oh, so that's the story they're telling themselves. It's like, I'm always sick. And I think, well, if you keep saying that, guess what? You're always going to be sick. I have such bad health. And there are ways that I do believe you can start telling the story and see it change. Does that make sense? You start telling
yes,
a different
does.
Story, and the elevation is happening.
Yeah, that's a start. You know, I mean, absolutely. I mean, to say, be really honest, I'm sicker than I would like, or maybe by some objective standard more than some of my friends. But I'm not just going to say, and I'm destined to be that for the rest of my life. What can I do about it? That would be a starting point. Well, maybe you need to eat differently or sleep differently or have a different environment that you work in, or whatever the things that you would come up with. But the starting point is to, as you're suggesting, just be very honest as to what is.
And I would like to go off a little bit on that tangent of, I'm very interested in what you have observed, since you have been fortunate enough to travel around the world, work with different shamans, different cultures. What's the difference when you have a country that's a melting pot that has many, many, many of those traditions versus a country that has more of what I would call a monoculture? Like when I went deep into the rainforest in Peru, it's not the same kind of stories. I mean, it's like you're in the outer limits. But in America, What do you see the differences? Because there's all of this, you talk about shamanic practices and those kinds of things. Is it more of a challenge if you live here as part of the melting pot to change your story?
Well, to connect to some of these transpersonal realms, it's more of a challenge, because in a country like the United States, where a lot of premium is based on, is placed on left brain knowledge,
right,
you know, scientific rigor,
right,
and you know, things that are unseen probably often don't exist. If my thesis, which is there's unseen, unconscious forces that influence us all, if that thesis is not as readily accepted in this country as opposed to, say, these countries you're talking about, then that's a first hurdle to get over.
Right,
what I have
right.
found is was when people in this country or any place start to do some of the practices and encounter, have these numinous experiences, then it's then that can become very transformative, because it really shakes up the world that they thought that they had. All of a sudden they see that they are part of a much larger picture that it is that it's possible to relate to. And that's an important part. It's not like you're just powerless being buffeted about by these forces. You could have a relationship with them and co-creatively cause things to happen that otherwise wouldn't. That's the magic of the work.
Got it. I mean, I really get it. And I'd like to just focus a little bit now on the nature piece, which is a part of it. And it came from an article I read that piqued my interest about you in the first place. And it was called Energy Healing with the Help of Nature. That's what piqued my interest, because I told you off air that I go to a place called Greer, Arizona, which maybe that's what caught my interest first, where something happens to me there. And I wrote about my last newsletter. I feel calmer. I sleep better. I walk slower. I'm very observant about the smells and the sounds. And it seems like I have to go away for that fix. And what do some of the wisdom traditions have to say about this? There's research that proves what happens to me in Greer helps me heal my body, my mind, my spirit. There's measurable research about nature deficit disorder.
Absolutely.
You know, so talk about nature and how that might help people willing to go on this journey change their story.
Well, a very simple thing is to go into nature wherever you live and just be, just sit.
Yes.
And just let whatever comes to you come.
Without your cell phone.
Without anything. And it's very hard because we have our to-do lists in our minds and everything, but just being in nature, and then start to have the thought that nature is observing us just like we are observing her.
Yes, love that.
That's powerful, because then you start to say, you know, we're part of a much larger set of energies. Some are visible, like nature, for example, the sun, the moon, the stars, the water, air, the earth, and some are invisible, you know, that we talk about the archetypal unseen forces that influence how we think, act, and feel. But in nature, it seems to me that we start to slow down a little bit. We shift from our being in the frontal lobes and the sympathetic nervous system kicking into the parasympathetic nervous system and more the limbic brain, the hind brain. We are slower brain waves. It triggers immune healing responses. Our cortisol levels go down. If you're around moving water, sometimes you encounter negative ions. Pine trees have particular chemicals that are healing. So there's just a whole group of things that happen when you're in nature that are very healthy and healing.
That are observable. I mean, you see people that say, oh my gosh, I so need my ocean fix. That's what's happening.
Yep.
Oh my gosh. I people on my team say to me at certain points, Gina, you really need to go to Greer, which means I'm probably being short and, you know, filled with angst. And, you know, we have to take a short break. But when we come back, just to piggyback on that a little bit, everybody can't always go to Greer or go get their ocean fix or go to the lake and sit out on a rowboat and go fishing. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that you would ask us to consider that will help us with our everyday healing and facing the myriad of you know, the assault of the devices, as I call it, and the gizmos, because
I think
people can use some help on that. Everybody, please stay here with me. We'll be back with Dr. Carl Greer in just a minute.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Pacific time at mrsgreensworld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at mrsgreensworld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio app. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. We are a proud member of the Dream Vision 7, Glimmerglass, Green Radio Divas, Blog Talk, and Speak Up Radio Networks. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@mrsgreensworld.com. We'd love to hear from you. And now, more with Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for being with us. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. Joining me for this hour is Dr. Carl Greer. He is a Jungian analyst, shamanic practitioner, clinical psychologist, author, and philanthropist. And I want to just read you a little bit more about him, because to me it is so reflective of his journey. He is a practicing clinical psychologist, a Jungian analyst, which I'm not even sure I know what that means, Carl, but I'm getting there. And, and shamanic practitioner. He received his PhD from Columbia University and was on their faculty teaching finance and management in the Graduate School of Business. And to me, that speaks volumes about the whole left brain thing. And then you moved to Chicago to work for an oil company. And after focusing on business for many years, you earned a doctorate in clinical psychology and then became a Jungian analyst. That's everybody's path, isn't it? It was like I read that and I thought, oh, what a journey, peppered with unbelievable experiences. So can we just go back to the how do you be in nature and get little snippets of it to keep life in balance and practice the presence?
Well, even if you live in a city, most people have parks. They may have little green places. Or if you're housebound for whatever reason, have plants. You can have sounds of running water. You could have images, nature images. All have been shown to affect your physiology in positive ways. So even if you can't be out by the ocean or on the lake or in the forest, you can find ways to get the benefits of nature if you're intentional about it. And those would be some of the ways that I know people have used.
It's such a great answer. And I mean, we put a feeder outside my office window because I have a home office, and it's a finch feeder. Do you know how many delightful moments I have during the day? Just looking at the different colors finches, the red and the yellow, and when they're smaller. And then this morning, we had a quail sighting. And I just go, you know, run out of the office and say to my husband, quail alert, quail alert.
Yes, yes.
They're so tiny. The little tiny babies are now in abundance in our area. And you have to stop and do that. I was busy. I was getting ready. And I went, no, I stopped for quail. So that's an example of it. Because, I mean, it was what brings me joy each day. That.
And that's an example of shaman time. I mean, you got your schedule. You're busy, busy, busy. And you want to check all the things off. And yet, all of a sudden, you stop and you're timeless, at least while you're watching the quail. And what a gift to yourself and to the universe that you did
right.
that.
My gosh, I caught a video yesterday, and they were jumping down off of a ledge. I mean, they are an inch tall. This is like nature's gift, and my husband and I were just so captivated. And if anybody comes over the house, even if I'm doing a show, and there's a hawk in the fountain, stop and just go and observe that. So that's one good example. And then what about, I want to talk more about the research, because this is not woo-woo, you know, airy-fairy stuff from where I sit. We have a very sick world in this country. Every other commercial is about taking pills.
Yep.
There is now official DSM something, nature deficit disorder that kids are being diagnosed with for not being out in nature. What are some of the kinds of things that can change? You mentioned it a little bit, but can't this if we do this and practice being present and those stories, wouldn't there be a lot more wellness instead of a lot more sickness?
There would, but so aspirationally, that's a good thought. But then, how do you actually get that to happen?
Yes. So, high in the sky.
But how do you get a lot of inner city kids who have never been out in nature out there? Well, you have to have some people who believe what we're talking about. They're willing to spend the money and organize it and get the buses and have a safe place for them to go to. And then the trick is, once you experience it, you're forever changed. And you have to have the people who are suggesting that it's a good idea to have also had the experience. Because a lot of times people will read stuff and think, oh, this is a good idea, but they've never personally experienced it.
Right.
But
right.
Once you've experienced the power of nature, and then you can facilitate it for others, then in my opinion, you're really onto something. But like all things, it takes some effort and intent to make it happen.
And there's a part of this where if you are, I am definitely on a path to consciousness more and more and more, and really, I don't want to say work at it. I continue to explore it. So just an example of that is we took a bunch of kids many times from our town to the mountains to ski. And for many of them, they had never seen snow. They had never seen it, feel it, experience it. And I will tell you, Carl, it was transformative for their lives. It was like, they ski now. They are snowboarders. It was just expanding that and a whole appreciation of nature that inner city kids did not have.
No, I live in Chicago, and, there's groups that take people up to the Boundary Waters, in Minnesota.
Right.
Kids, inner city kids. And similarly, I mean, their lives are changed. I mean, they're underwater, campfires. Then they start to get the feeling of ritual and ceremony. I mean, it's really powerful to sing around a campfire, to be around a campfire. It's those are magical moments that a kid and an adult never forget.
And, you know, it comes in kind of, messages are pouring into my brain, but that helps to expand people's consciousness and their experiences. And it's kind of like the gateway. When you are doing your work and traveling around the world, do you find, is there a generalization of the people you encounter? Are they consciously aware of wanting or needing some kind of transformation? I know that's a tough question, but I gave it a lot of thought. I mean, are people wanting to be more conscious? Or, like with my role to preservation of the planet, somehow it has to begin with a single step. You have to help them with the gateway or the observation, and it's like if you give a mouse a cookie, they want a glass of milk. So does that question make sense?
Yes. And I think different cultures try to answer that question in different ways. But I think everybody... let's back up for a second. I mean, let's say you start with the questions, were you someplace before you were in this lifetime? Why are you here? Who are you? What are you? And will you be someplace after you get out of this physical body? And, they're metaphysical questions, and everybody has their own ideas as to the answer. But most people would say, yeah, there's something bigger than us. And if you can start to, while you're alive, feel part of that bigger picture and have a more harmonious relationship to it, that can be healing. And I think everybody has that urge to connect to that larger energy. Now, sometimes it's stifled, sometimes people poo-poo it and they think it's woo-woo, but down deep, most people have that desire to come back to the place from which they came. And how they get there, it's journey work, it's through your dreams, it's through ritual and ceremony, and some cultures have more embedded rituals and ceremonies than we do. So I think all of those are factors, Gina, that would differentiate people around the world trying to connect to these larger energies through their own cultures. But I think the desire to do that is everywhere.
And I think about things like ceremonies when I worked with at-risk children and families, and I would say a ceremony makes you not the president one day and the president the next day, makes you a Supreme Court judge one day, not the next, or the next. Same with policemen and firefighters. There are ceremonies that's a type of ritual to say, this is what you are. Our culture is so steeped in them. Graduation parties, birthday parties.
Yes.
So
yep.
That's an example there are other ceremonies that you can do to support this, what I would call the spiritual part of our journey.
Yeah, and some of the things you mentioned are like initiations. You know, you initiated into the order of being a policeman.
Yes, yes.
Or you're now in the group of graduates. Traditionally in many societies, the initiations were to make you become aware of your spiritual essence or nature. But, marriage is an initiation. Death is an initiation. You know, certain rituals in the church and societies are initiations.
And in some cultures, like I read Maladoma Somme's book about the rituals and still very much prevalent in the South American cultures of the ceremony from a boy to a man and a girl to a woman. We don't need to talk about a lot of those, but that's another reflection.
Yep.
Carl, how much of this, in terms of the beginning, this is going to be beginners. My listeners are like me. They're on a journey. They're tuning in, literally and physically tuning in. How much of it begins with the journey to the quiet? That chapter calmed me because I think I have whirling dervish brain. It's hard for me to finish a sentence. I'm doing six things at a time. And it's not just me. People laugh about it all the time. How much of it is learning for us to be quiet, because we were born in the quiet.
Yeah.
And then it's like, boom!
Yes. Well, I think that's important. You know, to hear the voice of the higher powers, you have to be still. I mean, if you're chattering even inwardly, it's hard to hear anything else. And the quiet for me came about when I was doing destiny retrieval, kind of surprisingly, and searching for different destinies. And then I was taken just kind of spontaneously through a tunnel, through a crystalline matrix diamond-like place, into a space that I knew to be the quiet. And for me, it represented an energy that was before the Big Bang, before creation, before an idea, before the form of the idea, before energy, where everything is pure potential. And it was a very, very healing, calming place for me to be. Now, when I work with others, I've taken them on the same journey I had to get to that place, and they have their own experience, as we all are different, in it. And then they learn to get there on their own. But the notion, Gina, which I believe, is that quiet, it's not just 14 billion years ago, it surrounds us now, that we are living in a world of energetic pure potential, where other universes are being created, things are being created, in part because of the way in which we interact with it. You know, our thoughts and our energies can impact and cause things to happen that otherwise wouldn't. I mean, I believe that. But how you work with those energies respectfully is an individual thing. But first, I think a person has to believe that such energies exist and it's possible to work with them. And from the quiet, which I say is the place from all potential, all the worlds that we know have come, all the creatures and stones and plants and humans and animals are all from that place. So from that sense, we all contain the essence of that one, and we are all that one in the many in the one. I mean, that's how it works. But more than that, the notion is that there's invisible things that have an awareness that we are coexisting with. That would be the Jungian idea of archetypes, that are energies that influence how we think, act, and feel, that we can get caught in their grip. For example, a man can be a workaholic, and that would be, to put a name on it, like Hephaestus, the guy who's just working, 12 hours a day and kind of joyless. And if you're kind of in that pattern, you have a certain kind of a life that would be different than if you had a different pattern. So the trick is, if you are in that pattern and you recognize it, are there ways you can get out of it so that you have freedom to choose other ways of being? So the quiet is a place to restore and to see other possibilities, and it's a place that you can actually go to in a journey to get restored and energies to make change.
And it's the relatability of it for me is really important, as it is for anybody that's a part of Mrs. Green's world. It has to be, how can this be relevant to my life? And a lot of people ask me what was the journey to becoming Mrs. Green? And I was in the jungle, literally in the jungle, a little scared. I was with other people. It was not a tour boat, I like to tell people. We were with a tribe that a friend of mine knew very well. And I named my book, Your Mother Called, Mother Earth, You Better Call Her Back. And that is how I felt, is that Mother Earth kept calling me and saying things like, I'm really hurting, Gina. And you know how to speak in front of people. Can you start telling my story? And it wasn't that literal, but it was because of the quiet where I felt the pain, saw the devastation of the rainforest, saw the old trees being felled and burned, by the way, not even shipped out to be made into something beautiful, and said to myself, you have to do something about this. How can you tell people out in the world so that they would really care? So that is a parallel to what you're talking about.
Absolutely.
Of just listening, and then all of a sudden, you know, Mrs. Green was born, you know, almost 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. I want to talk too about, people ask me, things are such a mess, it's so terrible out there, blah, 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 how can we change the world, what's hope? And I have one answer that I give, and I say, the way that I think we can achieve long-term change for a healthier planet is to educate girls. Now, this does tie into you, because on your Twitter feed, I picked up a quote that says, as a result of my shamanic explorations, I am less influenced by patriarchal, masculine values of power, intellect, and accumulation. And we have to go to a break in about 3 minutes, but you have enough time to expand on that and give us a sense of what did you mean by that and why it is such a good thing.
Well, you know, as I said earlier, I think that nature is alive and observes us.
Right.
And I think all that we have has come from nature, this earth. And Quechua, they talk about the earth as Pachamama, you know, the mother.
Yep.
And she has been despoiled. You know, we are getting rid of a lot of our non-renewable resources, never to be replaced.
Quickly.
And a lot of our renewable resources are getting messed up. The oceans, the soils, the fisheries, a lot of the habitats. So, in a way, we're hurting the feminine. And in many, many cultures, the feminine is not valued, and the feminine values are not valued. And in fact, women are treated very, very badly. And it seems to me that to have a more humane, sustainable world going forward, those attitudes are going to have to change. And that it's more than just achievement, accumulation, and winning, all of which, by the way, are worlds that I have been in for most of my life.
Yes, yes.
But I can see their problems, and their causing things to happen that could be cataclysmic.
I know, and it's a burden. This is not about, you know, women taking over and women being in charge. This is more about what you call the balance and getting in touch with some of the values that are much more in balance and not so patriarchal. I was interviewing a wonderful person. All my guests are wonderful, but his name is Silesh Rao, and he was a producer of the movie Cowspiracy. And he was talking about, you know, the shift in consciousness as it relates to many things, but there is a shift, and you are part of this shift. He said 12% of millennials in the United States alone are vegetarians, and that's a piece of it to me. It's like, I'm not a vegetarian yet, but it, to me, that's reflective of a very big shift in consciousness.
Yes. And I believe this idea of the tipping point, that you get a certain point, enough people do something, then it changes and that becomes more the norm. And I think in many areas we're getting close to that, but we're not there in many areas as well.
We're not there yet, and I believe in it too. So we're going to take another break, quick break, and everybody please stay here with me. We'll have more from Dr. Carl Greer about changing your story, changing your life. Stay here with me.
Mrs. Green's world's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling. Thanks for being with us. The name of our show today is Change Your Story, Change Your Life. Joining me for this hour is Dr. Carl Greer, a Jungian analyst, shamanic practitioner, clinical psychologist, author, philanthropist, and thought leader. Carl, piggybacking on what you said about tipping points, in this realm of what I, you know, body, mind, spirit, I think people are getting aware of we are not a well nation, we are a sick nation. It's like all you have to do is look at commercials because there's a pill for that. And I feel like even our hospital, one of my best and favorite clients and partnerships with Mrs. Green's World is Tucson Medical Center. And their entire focus is on wealth, on health. They are wellness focused. They are doing everything they can. They send their patients home with videos on cooking healthy, really innovative and creative things. I do see it in some of the healthcare professions. What other areas are you seeing that are hopeful? Because good health can lead to time to reflect, time to spend in nature. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that start with good health. So what are some of the highlights that get you excited?
Well, in the health realm, you know, there's a lot of interest in prevention and holistic medicine, integrative
right.
medicine, and you know, the pillars of that would be nutrition, stress management, appropriate supplements, exercise, and then maybe some oriental medicine, acupuncture, chiropractic massage, all energetic things, which certainly have been proven to heal people and to keep them healthy. The problem is a lot of those programs are for middle class or richer people because they're expensive.
Right.
And so how do you get those programs to those who really need them? And that's an interest of mine. And so can you get people who are not used to eating healthy, knowing what healthy foods are, making them affordable? And in Chicago, we have ways to multiply the value of food stamps so that they can get healthy stuff at the same cost as not so healthy stuff, but then to teach people how to cook it and to enjoy it, because it's not just enough to say eat kale, but you know, how do you cook it, what kind of recipes to use. So it's more than just words.
Yes.
It takes some effort, but it is doable. And once people taste it and they start to feel a little bit better, they're more likely to stick to it. And as you said when we were talking earlier, just one person at a time, you get three or four people in a neighborhood that are starting to be different. And other people see that, then they want to do it too. And that's when stuff starts. But I think it takes an intentionality that it's better to prevent things before they start than to spend a lot of money trying to fix chronic diseases. And the research is that it's doable. I mean, there are things out there that you can do that will keep you healthier than if you don't.
And one example that I can say that I see everywhere I have gone in my travels this past year is with community gardens and people planting gardens, no matter how tiny their piece of land. I saw many, many, many in New York. It was like an Instagram feast, seeing all the community gardens. I saw them when I was in Washington, D.C. I saw them, of course, a lot of them when I was up in Providence, Rhode Island, but anywhere around the country. And to me, the green trifecta in that is that it is impacting your health positively. It is reconnecting you with Mother Nature, so it's planet, and then it can help save you money because you're not buying expensive, you know, organic vegetables or whatever. You're supplementing it with things that you actually grow. Is that a good example of a tipping point that we can hope for?
I think that's a great one. And back to what we were talking about in nature, in Chicago there are a lot of those as well. We're involved with them.
So exciting.
And, yeah, you get a lot of inner-city kids working in those gardens. You know, now you're getting, you know, back to this question, how do you get nature in the city? Well, I mean, that's really, you're getting in the soils and all the little microorganisms, you know, good for your gut, and you're learning to have things grow, and you can see them grow, and then you can eat what you've grown. It's a wonderful experience for these kids, and then it has all the benefits that you said. You know, they're healthier, and they have pride in what they did, and they save money.
It's one thing, and we have so many food conferences on, and it's, you know, Tucson got designated as a city of gastronomy, and wonderful things are happening because of that. So a lot of the health can begin around food. I agree with that. Can we shift for a minute and talk a little bit about compassion? And then we're going to talk about how you got 21,000 followers on Twitter. We're just going to get right down to it. It's like, I looked at that the other day and I'm like, what? But one of your Twitter feeds, and you learn a lot about people on Twitter, don't we know it, with the latest political action going on.
Right.
Which we don't really want to talk about. Talk about bringing the energy level down. So you say it's big work to discover who we are in this lifetime. We must be ruthlessly compassionate. What struck me about that is the horrible, mean things that members of my committee say to me in my head. I'm not compassionate with myself a lot of times. So talk to me what you mean about that, ruthlessly compassionate. Does that compassion start with our own self?
Yes, it does. And it's just to be true to yourself. And I mean, they're kind of funny juxtaposition of words, and people ask me about that ruthless compassion.
Yes, that's, but I get it.
It's kind of, but people do get it. It's kind of unwavering, unstinting, being kind to yourself in a unyielding, unrelenting way.
And it's really important because I mean, I make jokes about the committee. People laugh about it when I say, okay, everybody, hold on. You can't all speak at once. And I'm of course, saying this to myself so people don't think I'm crazy, but it is when those negative voices come up because of the work I've done, I'll say, no, that's not right. That's not your story. And that's what you're talking about, is listening in to what your own head is saying.
Yeah,
compassion for yourself.
Yeah, and even I talk about practices to have conversations with all those inner voices so that they are heard, and you can see what their message is, and then from your ego position decide you want to use that energy and information they offer or not, because they're all there. What happens for many of us, Gina, is that we have all these inner parts that affect us whether or not we like it or not, but can we have a new relationship that works better for us and for them by working with them? And I suggest that you can, but then there's some ways to do that, which I further talk about.
And, you know, I just want to tell people, get the book, go to Carl's website. We're going to talk about that before we end up the show, but those voices will help you when you address them. And I agree with you. You can't just tell them to shut up.
No, exactly.
You just really can't. I mean, I don't want to be crass, but you can't say, just shut up. You say, well, why are you saying that? And we all have those conversations in our head. And I do want to talk to you about, there were people who were doing the the preparation for the show and our team, you know, kind of questioning our guests, where they fit in, and me telling why I thought you were such a good fit for our show, not just because of the energy healing with the help of nature, but we are complex carbohydrates. We are mind, body, spirit. And to me, that spirit always comes last. And this is the part of the journey that I think I'd like to see the tipping point happen for. Does that make sense? It's like we need to really start thinking about that piece, and a lot of other things will fall into in place about our health and health of the planet. The consciousness has to start with healing yourself.
Yes, kind of the shamanic view is that we have a physical body, a kind of an emotional, psychological body, a spiritual body, and just a pure energy body, all of which interact with each other. But the thing that informs us is that energy body. So a lot of the healing work shamanically is to cleanse the energy body. The notion is that then that will reverberate down to the spiritual, psychological, and the physical body. Now, of course, they goes the other way too. If you've got physical ailments, it's going to affect you psychologically and spiritually and, you know, energetically. But that cycle is something that just is constantly, from a healing standpoint, needing to be observed and worked with. And so as you're doing work at the higher levels, you know, if your spiritual path has been kind of aimless and frustrating, as you connect to more spiritually desirable goals in this lifetime, desirable from the standpoint of you and spirit, a lot of times you'll see that your health and your psychology gets better. And how does one do that? Well, one does that by working in these inner realms, journey work, time in nature, working with your dreams, to get insights and energies that you wouldn't have if you're just working with your left brain.
And back to the analogy of everybody's getting their DNA tested, I admit I want to do it because it just seems like it's fun. And some of my friends have done it, and there were some surprises. But what occurred to me many times throughout your book, it's almost a back to the future, back to the history. It's like new thoughts, but ancient wisdom. Because in our DNA and in our thought and in our very essence of the molecules of what makes us up, we are creatures of the earth. We had a time when we observed the movements of fire, touched water, paid attention to the wind. People knew when it was going to rain other than clouds coming because of the change in the smell. So it's really a journey to get back in touch with what we are and how we got to be here. Is that really going off the reservation, so to speak?
No. Another way to think about that is, you know, any of us, all we have is the present and what we're going to decide to do next. And some of us feel we're more trapped in those choices as to what we're going to do in the present than others. And the whole work of healing, I don't call it psychology or shaman or anything else, is to be as free as possible in the present, to make the best possible choices as defined perhaps by best from the standpoint of you and spirit in this lifetime. And one way you do that is to be less encumbered by your past, so that the past doesn't live within you the same way that it did, so you're freer from unconscious past things. The other way to do it is to hook up to a future that's a little bit more desirable than the one that you're on, and have that future impacting what you're doing in the present. So that's the work. And if you do that effectively, you have more freedom to make choices that are better than had you not done that work. So all the stuff that I'm talking about and reading about and what I believe that, you know, healers do is to really get you to that place. And you get there by ritual and ceremonies and so forth. And you can't really transcend your DNA, but you can, you know, affect the way genes express themselves, you know, epigenetic changes. You can do things to given your DNA, change your probabilities of things happening just by the lifestyle choices that you make.
And to me, this change your story, change your life using these techniques really is a practical, it's a guide. It's a self-help guide that will help me and anybody else who chooses to buy the book and follow the journey. I found like I can't read ahead in the book. You can read ahead, but you have to go back. You have to really go back to chapter 3 and start writing. It's not one of those where it's the actions necessary to change whatever aspects of your story that you feel or that you're telling to change your future, change your story. It's just, I think I can do it, Carl. I think I'm up to it, and I want to be able to do that so I can share it with people that interact with me on Mrs. Green's World, because I want to be about wellness and about wellness of the earth. And this book is very healing. I'm sure you hear that word.
I do, and I thank you for saying that, though.
So the best ways, how did you get 21,000 followers on Twitter? And that's kind of a joke. I know you have to keep showing up every day and doing it. It's like, I've been showing up for a lot of years, but I don't have that many.
Yeah, you know, people have been interested in the ideas in the book. You know, they talk about them.
It speaks volumes about how many people there are wanting to talk about this. That's how I felt when I looked. I went, yeah, you think this is a fringe thing? It really isn't. It's kind of nibbling around the edges, but then you start taking bigger bites.
So there are a number of people who are kind of feel trapped in their lives. This is a way to kind of maybe get untrapped. And a lot of people are very spiritual, but they haven't found a way to put their spiritual practices into their everyday life. And for those people, some of them, this book has been helpful.
And I want to make a declaration. I think after reading a lot about your life and your life story, that you are being prepared with all of those steps, everything, Columbia and working in the financial world, all of that. I think sometimes we don't know what we're being prepared for, but clearly you are being prepared for this. Do you agree with that?
I would say that, yeah. Looking back, I could say that's probably true.
Yeah, looking back, that's what I have to do, too. It's like, how did I end up being Mrs. Green when I was, you know, managed large volume mental health contracts?
Yeah, right.
I know.
Right.
So,
and then you had a transformative experience in the jungle.
Yes.
that changed everything. And go figure, how would you have known that in advance?
And I was at a thing called Awakening the Dreamer, Changing the Dream. And part of the people of the group that put it on with me were the Pachamama. The people there. So it was really very transformative. And when I stood up in front of a group of, you know, 150 people and said, I'm going to start a radio show called Mrs. Green Goes Mainstream, it was pretty funny. I wish it had been caught on YouTube. It might have gone viral. So what's the best way to get the book and to stay connected with you, your website, Facebook, and Twitter before we have to wrap up? It's an hour gone by.
Well, I've enjoyed it. Well, it's carlgreer.com is my website.
Right.
The book is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. My publisher is Finhorn Press. I am on Facebook and Twitter, and I have periodic blogs, and I have a lot of blogs that I've done in the past that you can access through my website.
And if you're wanting to go on this journey, and I have so many listeners from around the country and around the world, you can email me. You can talk to me. I will talk about my journey, but I encourage anyone that's ready to take the next step in their journey to change their story, change their life. This is the how-to book to get. And I like I said, it's not been easy for me, but it's like, bring it on. Game on. I'm ready. I said yes. And the other thing I would recommend to people, and I am not your agent, is to connect with you on Twitter, because it's like I read Daily Thoughts every day. I read Seth Godin's blog every day. I read words from Martha Beck. Well, I'm going to add your Twitter feed, because it's like taking an injection of joy or contemplation or something like that that I think we all need. We're being assaulted with bad news. So I encourage people, sign up for your Twitter feed and get Carl's tweets.
Well, thank you, Gina, very much.
And I want to do a quick shout out. Next week, we have a Down to Earth show. Scott Clark and Fernanda Molina from Tucson Water talking about water customers. And as you know, our water department, living in the desert and being based here, is a very fragile conversation. And these are thought leaders in that department to make things happen. And then on July 2nd, we're having an anniversary celebration, and we're bringing back Greg Horn, who was one of the first people I ever interviewed on my show about 8 years ago. And it was a book called Living Green. And it was part of my transformation. And it's all about his environmental illnesses and what happened to him to give him a big wake-up call and change the path that he was on to one more of healing with the help of nature and changing his entire life. Carl, thank you so much for taking the time. I'm sure you're a man in demand. I appreciate it. Thanks from everybody in Mrs. Green's world. And people, check us out on iHeartRadio. Make it a great green day.